Welcome to iPodcast Magic Missile, where we play games and talk geek. Broadcasting every week from the New River Valley in the beautiful mountains of Southwest Virginia, we bring you audio from some of the most exciting games, new and old. No actual wizard spells here, just actual play from great games. This is iPodcast Magic Missile. Review. This is Dave.
This is Will.
This is Caitlin.
This is Duncan.
And I'm Yanni, a.k.a. Duke Leonardo Rosalka of Canterbury.
Okay. So, we're playing a game called
The Extraordinary Adventures of Baron Munchausen, a role-playing game in a new style.
Which was published in...
Ostensibly, 1798, but it was too risque for the audiences of the time, so the publishing was delayed 200 years until audiences were ready for it.
It was actually published in 1997, which still makes it one of the earliest story games and predating a lot of the modern indie RPG movement, which is outstanding, and I'm thoroughly excited to play this. The rules are fairly simple. Each of us will tell a story. Any of us can use... We have 5 gold coins in front of us. Each of us can use those coins to interrupt another player.
Add complications to their story.
And where we can pay them off to say, no, that's not what happened. Or we can accept that complication and take their money and proceed with their story. You can bet back and forth, trading insults. How does the duel kick in?
Basically, it doesn't have to ever kick in. If you take so great an umbrage, an insult to your family or name or the allegation that you aren't actually a nobleman or whatever, you could duel. If you duel, dueling is not to be taken lightly, because if you duel and you lose, the winner takes your entire purse and you are out of the game.
And Yanni has found for us a pair of Nerf dueling pistols, flintlock, which I think we'll have to use at some point.
Maybe so.
Normally one uses rock, paper, scissors, best 2 out of 3, but we're not going to do it that way.
Which must be front-loaded and...
You can't front-load rock, paper, scissors.
Muzzle.
That's ridiculous.
Rock, paper, scissors.
Muzzle-loaded rock, paper, scissors?
Yes,
so,
that's right.
Mm-hmm. So, let's go around and figure out who each of us is. Is that it? So we're ready to play right now other than our characters, right?
Sure. Everyone's got some monies.
And yes. So who, Yanni, who are you playing today?
I'm Duke Leonardo Rosalka of Canterbury. You've probably heard of me.
Duncan.
I'm Dr. Hedwig von Hortleck. I'm Ubermensch Estate in Latveria.
I am the Baroness Carla von Sauerbraten from the famous state of Sauerbraten in Germany.
I am Count Steve du Charleston, both in dance and city.
Yes, and I am the Viscount Charles of Tennessee. And parts of Kentucky and West Virginia.
So, a story finishes in one of two ways. Either the storyteller concludes it with a vow as to the truthfulness of the matter, or an offer to duel anyone who does not believe his word. Or, one of the other players drinks a toast to the Baron's health and his story. The storyteller then challenges the person on his right to tell a new story in a similar manner as the first person was challenged to a story.
All right.
And I'm going to be semi-non-creative and use one I picked out from the book earlier because I really liked it, which is... the Viscount Charles de Tennessee... Tell me about the time you removed the curse from the Swedish royal family.
Well, you see, the Swedish royal family have this curse. Where at night, they turn into cats. They're their cats. This is like a werewolf, but they're smaller and less dangerous. And not contagious like werewolf. So, I am traveling in Europe, away from my native Tennessee, where I grew up. And I see... I am at court in Sweden, yes. And I am there with the beautiful princess... who is a lovely lady, although it took me a long time to learn to pronounce her name. And the princess... I just call her Bo for short.
You say she is lovely, but I heard that she got incredibly fat at that time.
Well, I like the large ladies. I have no problem with this. It's more to love. She's incredibly lovely. Enchanting perfume. Wonderful dancer. Really. If she's not stepping on your feet, it's she's quite heavy. At least she wears flats. We are dancing and dancing and dancing, and the clock strikes midnight, and... Oh, and all of a sudden I am holding this this beautiful, fat, white Persian kitty in my arms. And I say to myself, I'm an open-minded man. I love all kinds of women. But, I'm not into cats. So I'm shocked. What happens to this lovely large princess? And then I look up and I see all the royal family is they are all like family little cats sitting up on the throne. It's very cute because the throne is padded and the cat curled up. Like, but it's and everyone's looking around like there's no big deal, because it's all these cats. And well, here's the scene. I go to bed, and that was the princess. Oh, she did come to bed. She slept with me, but it's only on my chest. You see, it's not in the way one might sleep with a princess. If one were trying to sleep with a princess and not concerned about her honor, which is in itself a thing. But in the morning, I wake up and she is lying on top of me, and she's quite large, and it is a. Well, I was having trouble breathing, and so I roll her off of me onto the floor, but there was pillows I had discarded in the night because I was warm. So she landed softly as a woman of such magnitude can land on the floor. And I ask her, what is wrong? And she says, we are cursed to become cats at night. We are their cats. And I say to her, it's not so bad. And she's like, well, but I would have liked to take you up to my room and and I say to her, well, I would have liked the same thing, but it's not possible with a cat. I mean, that's the same what we have done, which is,
excuse me, Vicomte Charles, but I have heard that in your part of the country, this is quite possible.
No. is entirely sheep and the farm animals, not cats. Or your cousin. Perhaps, sister, if you're very close, no.
Excuse me, I apologize for my misconception. I'm very ignorant of me.
We get to talking, and it turns out there was this witch. You say witch. And we have these witches in Tennessee. Normally, they're not so bad. They help with the babies, and they make the moonshine, and mostly leave people alone, but witches love the kitties. They love the kitties, little black kitties.
I've heard that they're very bad. I've heard that the witches steal children.
Well, occasionally, yes. But I would not cast aspersions upon my people. I mean, sometimes a child needs to... I will not speak of this.
Oh, well, carry on.
You see, there was this witch, and Swedish witches are, witches don't like the cold. So, and there's not many cats in Sweden, so.
Then where do you get the expression colder than a witch's tit?
Mm.
That seems like a very unusual detail for someone to
Well, this is why they hate the cold. They're cold all the time. They're cold all over. It just makes it worse when you have the cold. The tit is cold. And they poke out. You see the nipples? They get the little nipples and they poke out. And everyone sees these nipples. And also they cut the witches' tits are very sharp. They cut through the shirt, you see. And so it's very inconvenient. Which is like warm climate. That's why they live Tennessee. Or they don't live in the mountains. They live anyway. Yeah, you know, you don't no worry about this. So she says, the witch is very ornery, and the one particularly cold winter in Sweden, and the Swedish royal family. She come to their palace. She say, I want to stay here because it's warm in here. You have lots of wood for fireplace, and you made to put the wood, but put the wood in the fireplace. You know, this is creature comforts, which is busy casting magic and delivering babies and stealing occasionally the child too. But but they say, which bring down property value, you know, it's which is bad publicity. No one wants to see which. They got a big nose with war tunnels, you know. Which wants to hang out in front hallway, your dignitary come to visit, and, you know, it is not good. So they send her away, and she curse them, and say, tonight you will turn into cats. So that's a story she told me, and I don't believe her really, because, you know, she also says she's size 8. I know she's not size 8. So, which I don't mind, which is why she's lying to me, you know? Maybe they have different size in Sweden, but whatever. Anyway, so I ask her, what do I need to do to break the curse? Because I really would like to have a dance, you know. I say to her, I like big butts, I cannot lie. So I help you. So, okay. So I go. She says, a witch live on the mountain. Well, witch live on the mountain. I go up the mountain, talk to witch. So I summon my horse, which came with me to Europe, because I always have my horse with me. This is American thing. I have my cowboy hat and my horse. And so I ride up to the mountain on my horse. And I get to the top of the mountain. There's no witch. There's no witch. There's old house. Big old house. I think to myself, it has it's holes in the walls, and the windows have no glass and no shutters. And I say, why, if you don't like the cold, why would you go live on the mountain? It makes no sense to me. I said, she must have a reason. So I knock on the door. Bam, bam, bam. Nothing. I knock louder. Now, bam, bam. Nothing. Then I knock very softly. And the door opens. So I ride in on the horse. And I am sitting in the middle of a large room. The entire first floor is a large room, and there's a big cauldron over a fire on the floor. And I say, see, the fire is burning, but it gives no heat. This fire burns blue. And blue, but blue makes no sense. It gives no heat. Of course, the witch is cold. And the cauldron is burning, and there is an old witch staring. She's got the pointy hat, and she's got the. She says to me in Swedish, which I don't speak Swedish, but she says to me, "Why you come here?" And I look this up afterwards. What she said, because I don't speak Swedish. And I say to her, "I don't speak Swedish." And she's like, she says to me, "Oh, you're American. American only speak one language." So I speak a little Spanish. So I says to her, I'm American. I says to her, why do you curse the royal family of Sweden? She says to me, because this is not let me stay with them. I said, okay, well, maybe she wasn't lying. I also curse her to be fat, she says. I says, I don't mind. So, the witch, I say to her, can you uncast them? I really would like to, you know. She looks at me, she's like, then you must. Give me your firstborn child. And I say to her, he's 56. You're going to have good luck finding him, tracking him down. She says, point made. So she says to me, even better. You must find me somewhere warm. Because I'm sick of living here. And I ask her, why do you live on this mountain? She's like, well, this is where my house is. And I say to her, does that make more sense? But I have a friend who is a travel agent, as you say. Travel agent. Says, I set you up in Fiji. No problem. So she says to me, Fiji, is that warm? I say, yes, yes, Fiji is very warm. But you have to remove the curse. And I say to her, okay, Fiji it is. How do I remove the curse? And she takes a bottle and she scoops out the fluid from the cauldron and she says, here, this is the cure. And she hands it to me.
Well, Viscount Charles de Tennessee, that is no doubt the most amazing story I have heard tonight. A toast to your health.
Yes, a toast.
Cheers.
And congratulations on a well-met adventure.
It turns out we found out too late it was a suppository.
Or just in time.
No. It was quite unfortunate.
So, if you would like to come up with something out of whole cloth, you can. Or there is a mess of stuff to sample
from. Oh, I see.
For those listening at home, he was interfered with several times and has come out even. Though I think a couple of Caitlin's...
The Countess?
Yes, the Countess...
Baroness.
The Baroness's dollars have migrated to some other people by way of Tennessee.
As is customary.
Count Steve do some sort of dance.
Charleston, both city and dance. It is my full title. I would thank you to use it.
You have once spoke about sometime you have encountered these sirens of legend, these singing sea creatures who lure sailors to their deaths. How did you respond to their seductive songs and survive?
Well, it is a truly epic tale. It all began when I was interning in an ambulance. Well, you see, ambulances in my country, of Charleston, both city, country, and dance. We lost the country at one point. That is another tale. Ambulances, you see, are sea ambulances, and we all go across the ocean looking for people who are drowning. Our sea ambulances, which are from Charleston, whereas I am from as well. And so, me and my crew, who I do not know the names of, for they are beneath me, were setting off to look for poor unfortunate souls who cannot pilot their own ships and crash.
I heard that you were looking for a very specific man, the king of your country.
It's true. The king of Charleston, Charles, and he weighs quite a bit, was lost at sea, and I was looking for my father. And so, we set off looking for him. But, unfortunately, we did not know where in the entire ocean he had crashed. For you see, his ship, which is could be called a yacht, perhaps a ship, perhaps not, was known for having an incredible stock of food and fuel. and so it could have gone anywhere. Now, we first thought he went to see Las Vegas, but see Las Vegas was closed during that time of year. And after quite some celebration outside the gate, they still had some entertainment, they had a gift shop, we set off again, perhaps a few coins lighter and more women heavy.
Ah, the heavy women.
Both meanings. We set off again.
I see.
And our ship, our sea ambulance, became wrecked itself upon the great waves right outside Sea Las Vegas. That's one of the ways they get people in. You wreck your ship, you come to Sea Las Vegas, you have a good time. No one hears about it. What stays in Sea Las Vegas stays there, because that is a truism. And so, we became shipwrecked. But unfortunately for the times at Sea Las Vegas, we did not end up there again, or they would have had my entire purse. No, we went outside, much further, to Sea Nevada. Now, Sea Nevada is not quite as nice as Sea Las Vegas.
Now, hold on a minute here. I heard from a reputable geographer that Sea Nevada is entirely landlocked and inaccessible from Sea Las Vegas.
Well, that is certainly true. However, our ship has legs underneath of it. And so, upon our sailing, we wrecked upon a rock, and then our sea legs, which you have heard of, I'm sure, came out from the bottom of our ship and walked to Sea Nevada, which is surrounded by a moat, which is why it is, of course, called Sea Nevada.
I see.
But I'm further confused, because then I thought that Sea Las Vegas was contained within that landlocked geographical area that... Oh, I thought Sea Las Vegas was contained within the space of Sea Nevada.
But, of course, that is incorrect, as you know, because what is in Sea Nevada is not necessarily in Sea Las Vegas, because what is in Sea Las Vegas stays in Sea Las Vegas, and therefore, how could it be part of Sea Nevada?
I feel like you are making a...
That you have to actually...
I feel like your logic is invalid, sir. And...
Well, perhaps I am mistaken. I am terrible at geography. I leave that to others. But we do have sea legs. Rest assured. Do not worry about that.
All right.
So, regardless of how we got there, we got to Sea Nevada. I'll ask my men later for this. We'll clarify this. We'll get this solved. We got to Sea Nevada, and it was very, very barren. There's almost nothing to do there. Except for, of course, to twiddle your thumbs and to whittle. And so...
I've heard that prostitution is legal in Sea Nevada.
You went there?
Yes.
And I did not.
You're right.
I was going to.
Twiddle your thumbs, you say?
It is, of course, a gentleman's version of what one might do.
So you're saying you abrogated your tale in light of the fact that there are ladies present?
Perhaps. Or perhaps I was being more explicit. I wasn't. And so, I began to whittle a new ship, because I tired of our old one.
I am not sure I understand. You were gallivanting with whores, or were you building a ship? It seems like you have an inconsistency in your story.
They are not mutually exclusive. Some services
Explain?
Cost... Well, you see, some services in Sea Nevada cost more than others. Now, you could simply go to bed with one of these ladies of ill repute, which I, of course, would never do. However, if you are interested in their seamanship skills... That sort of thing costs quite a bit more.
But how does this come with you and the whittling?
Well, together, the two parties begin with a large piece of lumber, piece of wood, if you will, and upon working on it for roughly an hour, come to fruition with a ship. Which is a new sea ambulance.
An hour, sir. I salute you.
Well, maybe not all that's an hour. And so I whittled a new sea ambulance, this one without sea legs. They're very expensive. And I brought my new ship out to the ocean. By hand, it was extremely heavy. I will not do that again. And I set upon it without my crew, because I didn't take the time to think of it. It was very foolish of me. Because I later learned that they had set off without me as well, and I without them, which is convenient because we both left at the same time but without each other. This works very well in my story. And they, being poor peasants, crashed upon a rock merely 5 feet from where they started. But this set off their terrible siren of their sea ambulance. And I, going to the rescue, for I too was on a sea ambulance, crashed upon the same very rock, saving them and winning the hearts of all the women. Those women, did I mention them? They were there, and they had incredible busts. You could probably see their nipples through the clothing. It was quite ravishing.
A toast to the Count and his women.
I will second that.
I'll third it.
Well, Baroness Carla von Strasser-Varten, Uberstrassen...
Baroness Carla von Sauerbrunn, Uberstrassen.
My deepest apologies, Baroness. But would you regale us of your exploits, crossbreeding elephants and peacocks, and why you undertook such a bizarre venture?
Bizarre? What on earth about that is bizarre? It's progress. I'm sorry, I thought we were reaching a time in which humans were seeking progress. I thought, you know, this is a time of intellectual beauty, of moving forward in our state as humans in the world.
Press presentation aside, I am also quite interested in the results of your experiments.
Well, it all began with a natural fascination with... We've all heard the new theories about the ways... Well, we've all heard that there are some new ideas as to how species have come about. Things that have been presented now that we're no longer being ruled by the superstitions of the past. And you know, naturally, peacocks with their bright ornamentation and elephants with their wisdom and passions as their adventurous, beautiful...
You are
race.
Not perhaps just trying to make a larger, more voluptuous peacock.
Certainly that is one goal.
For I have heard they have much junk in their trunk.
Well, certainly... A useful trunk with junk inside is admirable as a trait in a peacock. You have to remember that the male peacock's tail is a sexual adaptation. It's a form of sexual selection. But my interests... In breeding these two animals, you know, it was naturally sparked when I would first was going through my expeditions in the jungles of Swaziland, and I first encountered peacocks.
Swaziland, do go on.
Not the Swaziland that you see on maps, spelled differently. There are two Z's.
Swaziland.
No, you're saying it incorrectly.
Not Swaziland.
No. That's the correct one. Swaziland.
The two Z's are separated.
No, they're together. Swaziland.
My God.
In the beginning, Swaziland. Peacocks are the apex predators in Swaziland, and male peacocks have. In addition to their bright ornamentation tail feathers, they have vicious, vicious competitive battles for mates. Exactly. Biting. My colleague, for those listening via the recording apparatus, was very well illustrating
the vicious fangs
of the male peacock during their breeding season. Similarly to elephants during must, which is the elephant equivalent to heat, peacocks also go into a must-like aggressiveness in their heat-like mating season, which was one of the reasons I chose to use them together in my breeding experiments. But in my expeditions in Swaziland, I would often see them locked in combat, and I was struck by their beauty and their elegance, and I remembered my time crossing the African savannah and the grace of the elephants. And
excuse me, Baroness, but I do not recall you crossbreeding the African savannah and gracefulness.
That is a different story.
One I hope you would be willing to regale us with at some point in the future. But back to the peacock elephant experiment.
Back to the peacocks. And it was really the witness. I had never really noticed it before, but some of the larger peacocks had started to develop rudimentary tusks. And it occurred to me that if they were on their own developing tusks, well, then they must have some similar, whatever the material it is, maybe whatever passes on between whatever.
What? I'm told that peacocks and elephants are in different egg groups. What did you use to chain breed a peacock and an elephant together?
Don't be ridiculous. I used a platypus.
Sorry, my confusion. I should have thought of it.
Yeah. It's a perfect intermediate stage. Anyway. But it was very difficult because initially, in order to capture, you know, capturing peacocks is very easy because they're attracted to bright colors, especially female peacocks. You want to get a female, you'd think you'd want a female elephant because of the size discrepancy. You'd think it would be easier to get a male peacock and a female elephant. But really, you want a female peacock and a male elephant. Because female peacocks are just so easy to catch. You just get something colorful. So, really what I did is I got my manservant, Charles, and I got him... Well, first I had to tie him down because he was acting up again, and I had to take this really quite toxic dye and smear it all over his face. But then, when he got used to the fumes, he was really quite docile. So I set him off into the forest, and I took a net, and I just kind of collected them as it came at him. And when female peacocks go into their estrus, which birds completely do, and not just mammals, they get this crazed look in their eyes, so you have to catch them before they pounce and assault you.
You would send your manservant to his death?
Yes.
I do not believe you would do that. You all seem like too much of a kind person to do that sort of thing.
I would do anything for science. Science in progress.
I believe you. But I feel for this man who has the same name as me.
You should. Anyway, so getting the female peacocks was quite easy. Charles is mostly okay.
Good to hear.
Elephants were slightly harder. A little bit. You know.
Is that a different color of paint you put on Charles to attract the elephants?
No, that was my job. Male elephants are a little bit trickier to seduce because elephants require this emotional relationship. Elephants, you have to do this. Well, you know, with human men, there are certain things that you could predict that they'll want from you. Male elephants are very sensitive, emotional creatures that you have to... I mean... You never know what they want from you, you know? And they expect you to know all these obscure references to old poetry. And, you know? And they...
I've heard that elephants never forget.
They don't.
They do not.
They will hold a grudge against you until they die. And so you have to... And then... There's all this dancing. It's... Anyway, eventually I had three or four that I thought would be suitable. But the hardest one was Barry. And Barry was just difficult because Barry was a very large elephant. And I had been tracking him for 3 days. And Charles was getting exhausted and he didn't want to carry the water anymore. So at this point it was just me carrying it. And he was tracking behind with, you know, he had all our notes. And I had the spear and I had my... You know, all of my old books, and I had, you know, I had my Latin, and I had all my studies, and I needed, you know, I had to keep on brushing up on, you know, some of these. Barry, he was very particular about his French conjugation, and if he only wanted to speak with me if we were talking in French, and not my
French
is
a very difficult language.
It's very difficult, and if I
spoke it, you know.
I'd believe this story, except I'm told he spoke Spanish.
He also speaks Spanish, but he butchers it every time.
He's not American, he doesn't know a little bit of Spanish.
Okay.
But... He'll judge you terribly, so I've been practicing. But he was just not buying it, so I knew I was going to have to take him down. So eventually, I'm just sitting there, and he's sitting there, and he has a stupid, pretentious beret on, and he's not even a French elephant. He's freaking... Anyway, so, you know, I'm sitting there, and I'm in the tall grass, and, you know, I'm just getting ready to pounce, and I can just, you know, it hasn't rained for days, so, you know... There could be brush fire. There could be anything. Everyone's exhausted. Charles hasn't drunk or eaten anything in a week, you know. And he's just pissed off at me. And I'm sitting there and I'm waiting. And I can't make a sound or he'll just run. He'll trigger all the other elephants and there'll be a stampede. And I just can't let that happen. And I thought I was going to get him. And then finally, I just like stepped forward at the wrong moment. And my foot's... I guess, I don't know what was this stuff on. Maybe it was, you know, some of the garbage I left around, or maybe it was just a twig or something, but he spooked, and he freaked out, and he reared up on his legs, and his tiny little elephant hat just flew right off of his head, and he started stampeding off, so I had to throw my spear, and it hit him right in the flank. And, you know... We got him in, but it was just tragic because we had our elephant and we had his beautiful, perfect seed for our peacocks, but at what price? Such a beautiful beast, and we had broken him. Anyway, and then we forced them to mate, and then we had tiny peacock baby elephants.
To science!
To science.
To science.
That's a tragic tale, no doubt.
Clang, clang. Clang.
Do you have a challenge, or do you want to just let Duncan do his...
I want a challenge.
You challenge me.
Yeah.
I'm challenge him all the way.
Don't challenge me. I'll have to sit around thinking of something. Also, I'm now British. I don't know why.
It's okay, my accent went back and forth between German and French and Hebrew.
Yeah.
That's what
I was saying. I thought you sounded like this.
Ironically, I do not speak any of those languages.
Funny.
Luckily, I have no accent.
I speak the native language of Tennessee.
I'm from a lot of places.
Love. Mm. This is not even a German name.
How you caused the Pope to be stripped naked and paraded through the streets of Vienna.
Ooh, I've always wanted to hear this story.
That's one of my favorites, actually.
Surprisingly unrisque.
The Pope always wears a merkin over his junk. So he's not actually naked, even when he is naked.
The Pope was visiting my native country of Latveria. And he was doing this because he was trying to spread the love of the church throughout, you know, Eastern Europe. And he had invited myself and Count von Doom and a few other nobles of Latveria to...
Is not Count von Doom a doctor?
He is a doctor. He is Dr. Count von Doom. Or Count Dr. Von Doom. Some even call him Dr. Doom. But in Latveria, we call him Count Von Doom.
I think, actually, you incorporated that in. You get to keep the...
Yeah. Ah, well then. Anyways, on with my story. So, myself, Count Von Doom, a few other important noblemen, and the Pope and his entourage were all at dinner. And I took it upon myself to spice things up a bit. You see, so I went to where they had the kegs of sacramental wine. And I spiked them with a large amount of a Latverian brew that we make from the pure distilled wormwood. It's a little like absinthe, except minus the alcohol and plus the hallucinogen. So it's really just all hallucinogen, you see?
I hear there is a heavy dose of horse piss in there as well.
How dare you insult Latverian brew? You will find no horse piss here.
I have been to Latveria. I have drunk your brew, and it tastes like horse piss.
That is your own fault. There is no horse piss in Latverian brew. It is brewed by the finest Latverian brewers. I take it as
a horses and they piss in it. You are a liar, sir, and a fraud.
I believe there's only one way to resolve this. I challenge you to a duel.
I accept.
Well, if it is to be a duel, then you must both have seconds, surely.
All right. Would you like some turkey, perhaps?
I prefer stuffing, but...
Duper Salka? Will you be my second?
I would Can't be happy see. To be second in
Fellow
the case
American
of your...
from Sea America.
Untimely
will you be
demise?
My second? It would be my pleasure. If you are too cowardly to fight your duel, I will fight it for you.
Is that how this works?
That's how a second works.
I guess I'm the referee. Whatever the fuck you call that in a duel.
As a disinterested third party, would you present the arms to the maimed combatants?
Oh, as a lady... Oh, guns! Oh! I'm a lady!
He's getting his bullets first! He's cheating! He has no honor!
Here, I might need a second one.
You will not need a second.
I already have a second.
The first time?
It's, Duke Rusalka. However, I may need a second bullet. In case we both miss.
There will be no missing.
I wouldn't want to have to come pistol whip you.
I'm afraid the premises do not quite account for 10 paces.
However, if we both stand in the corner and backwards...
From here to here is probably the best.
Alright. So, back to back, pace, and turn. When
maybe
the uninterested party... Counts to three.
Maybe take one more step this way.
Oh,
both of you? Yeah.
Well, you're a little bit more in the middle.
What? Right.
Wait, hold on a second.
Now, do you guys both have your pistols cocked?
I don't know how to fire a pistol.
Have you ever cocked pistols
before? That is why you have designated.
So how does this work? You're gonna count 1, 2, 3, and each one we're going to get pace, and then on 3 we turn and fire.
Mm-hmm. 1, 2, 3.
You missed. Oh,
that was real well done, sir.
I am victorious. Hot piss it is.
Oh, delightful. Oh, my lady, hot cat saddle the violets.
May you faint.
I might faint.
I drink your milkshake, sir.
I drink it up.
My milkshake brings all the boys to the yard.
Is it even better than his?
Yeah.
He could teach you, but he would have to charge you. At least that's what I hear.
Not for his horse piss.
Ooh, burn.
For you see, I am his second. So, you are last, then?
Yes.
Can I ask him to tell me the story of something? That's
yes.
My dying wish.
I think that's appropriate.
It's so cold. Tell me the story of before my last gasp escapes this mortal coil or whatever. I'll see what these are.
And that was one of the many times that Baron. Oh, doctor, whatever save his died. Oh, this game is so fun.
I'm super glad that fell through on getting me. He was going
to
let me borrow some six shooter Nerf guns, and wasn't able to make
it. I've got one at work.
So I asked at Pathfinder if anyone had them, and Gray was like, "Well, I've got a pair of flintlock Nerf guns." I was like, "Oh my god, best thing ever!"
That's awesome.
It's so cold.
That's Nerf guns.
It's my last wish. Duke Rasalka, will you please tell me of the time you used Stevenson's rocket locomotive to cure Prince Augustus of the gout? That is a fine story, and I know it well. I will try to be succinct so that you may hear the end of it before the bleeding becomes too bad. For we have no such thing as 911 here.
Only when we're at sea.
What was his name again?
I don't remember.
Anyway, he had the gout.
Stevenson.
Before I became a duke, and in fact, because of this, I became a duke. I was but a humble doctor such as yourself, and I had been employed by the royal court to cure anything that ailed
Prince Augustus.
Yeah, Prince Augustus. Well, but any of the royal staff. I was on general retainer at the time. When the dear Prince Augustus came down with the gout, and we tried many things. We tried flying him to the moon in General Verne's gunship. But
did not his gunship sink, for it was made of metal and a gun in the water?
No, it was a ship that was in a gun, and then it was fired to the moon.
Oh, I see. I was mistaken. An easy mistake to make.
Yes, it should maybe be called a ship gun. But then that gives all the entirely the wrong connotations. No, so General Burns shot us to the moon in the hopes that the more rarefied air there would provide a palliative to Prince Augustus's gout. Unfortunately, our stay was cut terribly short by some unruly natives, and we were forced to push the ship off the tip of the moon
and...
Did you not... It was not so much that the natives were unruly, it was that you have slept with the Queen of the Moonanites, yes? I hear they are an unruly lot.
Yes, that would have been fine, really, except that I'd just previously slept with both of her sisters, and while we were... I may have mentioned the princess's name instead of the queen's. We did have to leave in a hurry.
May I ask successively or concurrently?
The sisters or the queen?
Sure.
Then yes, and then yes. No, the other way around. Concurrently and then successively. The sisters and then the queen and the queen.
The Moonanites, they locked together. They
form a triangle.
They do form.
It's kind of like Voltron. Yes.
Legos.
Anyway, we were forced to push the ship off of the moon and fall back to Earth. I did not have time to get into the ship, so I had to just hold on to the outside where we fell into the ocean, and we're towed back to land by General Verne's gunship, the one that actually is a ship with guns on it, which later sank, as you mentioned earlier. But that was later, much, much later. That failing, I figured the best way to get verified air was to get him going really fast. And so first we tried some of Mr. Orwell's electric horses on a carriage, but in Latvia, his fine country where we were at the time, there just aren't enough straight roads, and so the horses couldn't build up enough speed. And so we could go a little fast, and while it was happening, the prince said he felt better, and it was great, but he said, more speed, we need more speed! And I figured he was right, we really did need more speed if he was going to be cured. So I set about researching every scientific journal I could find until I heard of Mr. Stevenson's rocket train. Unfortunately, that was in America. So we had to sail across the ocean, which is an adventure for another time. We had many, many interesting things happen on that ship. But when we got to America, they hadn't quite yet finished the railroads. And so we had to delay our trip for a whole week while they connected up the east and the west part. And in fact, we started early by accident. We had a telegraph that it was going to be done that day, and so we decided to set out. But as we were going, and the train was picking up speed, heading towards the west coast, we got another telegraph, because one of the awesome things about Mr. Stevenson's rocket train is it is able to receive telegraphs while moving. I'm not sure how they accomplished it, because I am but a humble doctor. Well, I was but a humble doctor, now I'm a duke, because as you may well know, we did eventually get going fast enough to cure Prince Augustus's gout. But I'm getting ahead of myself, for when we got to the middle of America, which, as you may know, is the Grand Canyon, the two competing railroads had both run into a snag, and that neither of them had bridges good enough to get across. And so the rail network was not connected yet. Again, fortunately, Mr. Stevenson's engineering is above reproach, and we did mention it was a rocket train, right? Well, he turned on all of the rockets. Apparently, he'd been holding some back. And when we hit the end of the line, the train rocketed up into the air, and it was at
Hold
that...
Hold on, sir! I heard that there were no ramps on either side, and regardless of velocity, for you did not have any airfoils, you could not possibly have gone up into the air, because everyone knows that rocket trains need to be exactly level, parallel to the ground with their rockets, or else the whole thing will fly off its hinges.
Well, that commonly accepted fact now, which we have learned from some of the poor results of this exciting trip through the air. There wasn't really a ramp. There was a little gentle incline where they were getting ready to build the bridge over the Grand Canyon. But it was enough to get us started. And, we didn't hit the other track.
No, I should think not.
No. But in that one beautiful moment where all of the rockets were engaged and we were flying at full speed over the Grand Canyon, the prince was cured, and then we crashed on the other side of the Grand Canyon, and we were all lucky to survive. Several people lost limbs, but as I said, I was a doctor, and almost nobody died.
There is only one thing wrong with your story, sir. You said that you were not born of noble blood.
That's true. Upon being cured, the prince awarded me a dukedom.
But how could I trust such a fantastic story from someone of such low birth?
Because, as a nobleman, I would never lie.
I do not believe you have noble blood through your veins, regardless of what one madman says.
Are you calling the Prince Augustus of Latvia a madman, while his comrade in arms lies dying on the floor?
He did eat a horse yesterday.
Avenge me. I think that this is just a thing they do.
Oh, that's common?
Yeah.
He's very strange. He is at least very strange. He and his people. His ways are different than mine, and therefore I do not like it.
Pretend this is a glove. No such insult from the likes of you.
Well, then that's good, because I will insult you and then have my insult not taken and therefore will be upset about it with you. A duel!
Okay. I wasn't sure if you were accepting my challenge or not. Or we're going to back down.
I never back down like from anything. Cover. Would you be my second?
I'll be your second.
You're dying. Shut up.
No, but I want to see this.
Perhaps the passion of his story has brought you back to life.
I'm still dying.
I could ask for no better second than a countryman from my adopted country. As the challenger, you may pick first. I'm the challenger, so you get to pick first.
Could the shovel be my pick? I choose this one. It is the superior weapon.
Also closest to you.
Shh! Silence, you.
Here, you get pulled back all the way till the pot clicks. There you go.
There we go.
I do not like this.
Second, let me out.
I feel that it is defective.
As the impartial judge, I will give the count.
I am the count.
Are you ready?
I am ready.
One. Two. Three.
With your dying breath, you wounded me fatally.
I forgot to cock it the second time.
I am sorry, but I think you are contractually obligated to survive this one.
My dying breath.
He's very strange.
All right.
And as I said, for the third time today, give me your purse and no one gets hurt.
Well, no one else gets hurt.
No one gets hurt any further.
And everyone... Oh, wait, nope. You've been to Latveria. So there's still someone left to carry on the legend.
Does that mean that you guys are ineligible to win?
No. It means we are ineligible to vote.
I see.
So, the three of you have money. Take all your money and put it in your purse. it may be that the other two of you combined can outvote Will as to who you think has the best story, but I am not sure because I haven't been keeping close track of how much money everyone has. Unfortunately, I have no money to vote with.
Well, we're both dead.
Yeah. that's a side effect of being dead.
Yeah.
Ready.
So, everybody think of who you're going to vote for first. And when everyone is ready, I think you can go pretty much go in whatever order.
Just throws of the coins at whoever is dead.
Making it hail, as they say in my country.
one additional thing, so you know, whoever wins is also allowed to pose the question for the first story of the next game.
Gotcha.
Whenever it shall be played. Do you know who you would have voted for, Duncan?
De trois
quatorze.
Well, I think Dave definitely gets
that.
Yeah,
good one. I think
well,
it was the description of the cats on thrones.
Yeah, that really helped.
I know my audience. Merci. Merci. That is Tennessean for thank you.
I thought it was Tennessean for I give up.
No, that is... Merci.
Oh, okay.
But merci.
This Appalachian accents are hard to
it's very, yes, it's very strange. You have, what, this, the reason my accent is so here and there is that in one valley you have one way of speaking, and in another valley you have another way of speaking. They're very different. No one can understand
as
anyone.
As a Viscount, I would imagine,
that
and I'm speaking from the dead here,
you accidentally sleep with your cousin because you do not know. You cannot communicate to understand that they're your cousin.
It seems like a good excuse as any. Well, that, ladies and gentlemen, is the extraordinary adventures of Baron Munchausen.
That was pretty fun.
That was
a lovely game.
This podcast is fully copyrighted by its hosts. Visit us at podcastmagicmissile.com. I Podcast Magic Missile, attacking the darkness since 2012.